You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, I'm Kat, and you're listening to Cattails. In this edition, I call stateside to catch up with the fabulous one and only Chesney Hawkes. Chesney shot to fame when he won the lead role in the film Buddy Song alongside Roger Daltrey, but it was when he found himself to be one of the first teenagers in pop history to bag the number one spot with a debut release that he made international stardom. The one and only stayed at the top for 5 weeks, going on to become one of the undisputed global anthems of its time as it crashed the top tens worldwide, including the notoriously difficult markets of Japan and America. You can't take that away from him, but there's certainly a whole lot more to Chesney than one song. He has maintained a successful career in the entertainment industry that now spans nearly 30 years, writing music for TV and film, appearing in theatre, and of course, releasing his own music. This is The One with Chesney Hawkes. Welcome, Chesney. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good, and you're over in LA. Sunny LA, is it sunny today?
Yes, it's always sunny in LA. Absolutely beautiful here right now. It's kind of like perfect weather, you know. It's not too hot. Can get a little bit too hot here sometimes. A couple of weeks ago, it got up to 100 degrees already.
Oh, my word.
It's perfect.
Oh, do you know, for my pale skin, I would just burn like a crisp. How do you cope with that kind of weather?
AC.
It's the only way, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is the only way. When it gets that hot here, you know, we have a swimming pool, so at least we can go and cool down out the back there. But it's kind of brutal because you feel it from the sun, but you also it kind of comes off of the roads, you know, off the tarmac, so you can feel it from all angles. It's crazy when it gets that hot.
Oh, no escape, is there really? A bit different from Windsor, where you were born, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. What's the weather like over there right now?
Well, do you know, it's been lovely here, quite sunny for a couple of days or so, a few weeks. And the irony is, of course, with this lockdown, it's beautiful weather and you can't go out.
It's one of God's jokes, isn't it?
It is a bit. So what have you been doing with this lockdown then? How have you been amusing yourself?
Well, to be honest, The first few weeks were actually quite nice. I mean, the whole thing's been quite nice. I've been able to spend time with my family, which I don't really get a chance to do because I'm always on the road. I'm always traveling, and I had so many plans, lots and lots of gigs and all sorts of things. I had a new album that I was hoping to promote, so I really was going to be spending a lot of time away from my family. So it's quite a nice kind of novelty just to, you know, be here. With my kids, and of course they're not even at school, so it's literally we're all here together, and we've been, you know, playing board games. We've got a puzzle on the kitchen table. You know, we've been taking the dog for a walk, and just spending time together, having dinners together, and it's been actually really that part of it has been really really lovely.
Take something like this, doesn't it, to bring that sort of realism back to life again and say, well, hold on a minute, stop a second and just think about what you've got.
Yeah, it's like I equate it to kind of just like getting off the train for a little bit. You know, it was a real welcome break for me. I mean, I think we all kind of feel a little bit like that, don't we, that our lives have been going very fast. And we live in a fast world, don't we? And mine is particularly fast because I'm always, you know, traveling back and forth between Los Angeles and London, and it just gets a little bit much, you know. And I didn't realize how tired my body actually was until I stopped, and then I just kind of crashed a little bit, you know, just like, wow, this is actually really nice to take a break from the craziness of life. And it's an interesting kind of thing, place that we're in life right now.
You're right, actually. I think everybody I've spoken to has been going, do you know what? I'm so tired. I can't believe how tired I am. And it's just life, isn't it? The fast pace, as you say, for anybody, you know, but for you, with your extraordinary lifestyle, it must be even worse.
Yeah, I think that when you stop, when you're forced to stop like this, that's when you get ill, you know, when your body has a chance to kind of get ill or to recuperate, you know. So I think for everybody, you know, it's been a little bit like, you know, we've all managed to have a moment where we're just stepping off of the wheel of life for a second. Mm-hmm. And that's when you realize how fast you were actually running in the first place. You know, that everything in this life is like now, isn't it? It's like you're running around to do this, you're running to do that, everyone is working so hard, and, you know, it's nice to stop and smell the roses and you know, absolutely what you just said, you know, just kind of, you know, realize what you have in front of you, because I think so many people don't. So many people go through life and suddenly, you know, get into, you know, later years and think, oh, my goodness, what happened there? And suddenly in your 60s and you're like, I didn't really pay attention there. I didn't stop and smell the coffee and kind of appreciate what I had right in front of my face. It happened all over the world to a lot of people.
It does. And I think sometimes something like this, which is an extraordinary scenario, isn't it, for everybody? But actually, it's probably a good thing in the long run, isn't it? Let's hope so.
I do. I don't think life for most people is going to go back to the way it was before. Mm. I think everybody has realised that there's certain things in their life that they want to change. You know, a lot of people I think are going to be working from home more, spending more time with family. You know, the other thing is I think that it's done the planet a lot of good. You know, it's stopped you know, us kind of humans creating all sorts of havoc all around the world, and nature has kind of breathed a sigh of relief for a little bit. You know, it's that part of it is just a beautiful thing.
Oh, it is, isn't it? It's like Mother Nature's gone, hey, look, you guys can't sort it. Give me a chance here. I'm just laying back here and sorting it for you.
Exactly. It does feel a bit like that. It almost feels biblical, you know.
It is.
It's like Noah's Ark, you know. It's like, you know what? We're just going to send the flood.
The plague is coming your way, and that's it. Whatever that plague may be, whether it's locust or, in this case, COVID-19, it's here.
Yeah, and it's not going away for a while, is it?
I don't think it will be either. But as you say, it's quite nice to step off that train, isn't it? And your train has been going since, what, crikey, 1990? Something like that, isn't it? So for like 30, 40 years, crikey. Oh, I can't even calculate it. It's a long time. You've been on that train.
You can't count it on two hands, Kat, then we're all over.
That's true. Oh, God, don't say that.
Use your feet. Well,
oh yes, oh no. Well, that's what you're aiming for, a long career, and you've had a long career, so that's brilliant, Chesney. Come on, you have. So, and where did it all start then? You know, you've come from a background of musical genius anyway, so that was must have been in your blood to start with. What was your big break?
The big break was I was 17, 18 years old, and I got the part of Buddy in a film starring Roger Daltrey called Buddy's Song. That was the big break and what kind of, you know, got me the record deal and all that kind of stuff. But you touched upon my childhood, and yes, my father was in a band called the Tremolos, so they were a big 60s band, and, you know, they had, I think, 15 top 10 hits through the 60s.
Wow.
And very successful. And so music was definitely, you know, around me, guitars everywhere, and my dad had a lovely piano in the lounge, and of course all of his friends were musicians and 60s superstars, so I grew up not only around music, but I grew up around fame, so I saw it, all of my dad's friends were famous, and or a lot of them anyway, and so when it came to my turn, as it were, it wasn't such an alien kind of thing to think that I might be famous.
Yeah, and I suppose it must have been a little bit like just carrying on with the family name in a way, mustn't it? Because I'm sure that there were times when, you know, there were family parties or, you know, instances where you went on tour with your dad, and then there were people around you all the time. So it must have been a little bit sort of every day for you guys, I guess.
Yeah, it was. My parents were quite a liberal kind of rock and roll hippie family, really. They used to throw parties, as you say, like, and there was always a few guitars hanging around and people, you know, getting up and singing. And sometimes they even had a stage in the back garden where people would get up and do gigs. And we witnessed all of that. And yes, we went to see Dad play when we were kids. And, you know, I remember even as young as 8 or 9 years old, looking from the wings and seeing him, you know, on stage there with his leather trousers and girls throwing knickers at him and stuff like that. And even at 8, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Yes.
Maybe it was the knickers. Yeah, I'll take a bit of that.
But in a way, was it almost like an expectation that you would follow in your dad's footsteps?
I mean, it wasn't so much an expectation, but because music was around us so much, my brother's a drummer, and he still is my drummer, has been since we were kids. My sister became a singer and a songwriter, and of course I did what I did. You know, I think we were never going to become accountants. You know, my family is definitely not the kind of 9-to-5 kind of people. You know, it's all about the entertainment business, I feel like it was in the blood, and it was encouraged. You know, music and creativity, which I'm very, very glad about. But on the other hand, you know, my parents are, you know, they still have their feet on the ground. And when I left school, my dad said to me, "What do you want to do now, son?" And I said, "Well, obviously, I want to go and pursue a music career." And he said, and I was only, you know, just 15, 16. And then he said, "Well, if you're not earning money by the end of the summer, then you're going to have to go to college because you need a backup." So, you know, I did have the other side of it as well. I went off and found gigs around the area playing piano and playing, you know, Elton John and Stevie Wonder and Barry Manilow and John Lennon songs and things like that, and Billy Joel. And I ended up, you know, doing quite well even at that young age. I was playing, you know, 3 or 4 times a week and earning a living even.
That's brilliant. You know, a lot of people have tried it but failed, haven't they? And your dad gave you some great advice there. You know, as many parents do, that if this doesn't work, go and get a proper job. It's almost like go and get a trade, go and get something that you can fall back on, isn't it? So, you know.
Yeah, but the thing is, for me, I never really seriously had any backup plan, you know, and I think that to really make it in this industry, it's best not to have a backup plan, because you just have to put all your eggs into it. I mean, I understand the sense of having a backup plan in case it doesn't work, because, you know, really, there's very, very little chance that you're going to make it, because so many people try and the competition is huge. But on the other hand, I think the people that do have a backup plan and, you know, something to fall back on, those are the ones that don't make it. You know, it's like if you've got nothing left and you have to do it, and it's just everything. I can see it in my 14-year-old son. He's a guitar player, and he just absolutely lives and breathes music. And, you know, I'm just trying to keep him interested in doing schoolwork at the moment, but, you know, music is everything to him, and I can see it and I can relate to it. And of course, I think that the people with that kind of drive, you'll find that most of the people that have made it, they had that. They had that drive and that kind of, you know, absolutely, you know, one-way street, you know, blinders. It's the way that you can't, there's no other option. It's like you have to make it, you know. So and I do a lot of production and for the young artists and things like that, working with young artists, and that, when I see that kind of the eye of the tiger in their eyes, and you know, and you can see that kind of absolute, you know, gritted teeth. No matter what, this is my path. That drive and ambition, and you know, and I'll do whatever it takes type of attitude. Those are the ones you stick with. You know?
Yeah, absolutely, because you can see yourself in them, can't you? And as you're saying there about your son, you can almost see that mirror image, can't you, of that journey that you took.
I can. I see it, you know, because I remember at his age, I used to just come home from school and get straight on the piano and, you know, writing songs and working out chords and songs. It was just my life, you know. You know, looking back, I wish I'd have maybe concentrated a little bit more on my work at school, but, you know, it was all about the music. It was like, I can't see how that's going to help me in my music career, so I'm not going to do that, you know.
I do.
It's that teenage logic, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, in a way, you've got to throw yourself, as you said, all your eggs in one basket. You've almost got to put yourself in that path, haven't you, in order to succeed. And succeed you did. I mean, I suppose the big thing that everybody remembers you for, let's talk about the past for a moment, but is the one and only. I mean, that's your massive, massive hit, wasn't it? I mean, what an absolute success that must be. Does that feel like your best moment?
It feels like the most successful in the music industry moment, for sure. You know, obviously, there's nothing else that I have put out has has sold that many. But no, I mean, I wouldn't say it's my biggest success because, you know, I love all of the records I've made over the years. And, you know, like any artist, the latest work that you've done is the stuff that you think is the best, you know. So yeah. I'm really proud of this new album that I'm closing in on now. But I certainly wouldn't change anything that happened to me back then with the One and Only. I had my moments with it, you know. I didn't play it for maybe 7 years after. you know, we kind of fell out of. We're back to being friends with benefits. So.
Yeah, it was so successful for you. I mean, I can. I'm singing it in my head, obviously, and I remember it at the time. It was just so anthemic. It was just there, wasn't it? And it captured that moment, and it was really something that obviously it topped the UK charts, didn't it? It was over there in the top 10 in the US, so it was hugely, hugely successful. I mean, how did that come about for you? That was something that you didn't write yourself at that time, was it? It was Nick Kershaw, am I right in saying, wrote that?
Yes, absolutely. I was very lucky to be able to get to meet Nick back then. I mean, the way it came about, I finished the album, and this was we were closing in on recording of the soundtrack album, which was going to be my first album. And we had filmed the film and pretty much recorded the whole album. And the record company were like, "Well, maybe we should look for another song or two, just to kind of put it over the edge, just to kind of close it, you know." And my dad actually found the song from a friend of his who worked for Warner Chappell Music. And, you know, Nick, it was obviously Nick Kershaw. He's such an iconic sound. You could be nobody else when you hear Nick singing. But they were just demos, and Nick was kind of taking a sabbatical from, you know, from his pop stardom and wanted to kind of write and produce for other people. And glad of it, because I still have the cassette that my dad brought back. And,
wow.
You know, I'd put an asterisk by the One and Only and a couple of other songs, because I was such a huge Nick Kershaw fan when I was a teenager. And so for me, one of the guiding forces into wanting to do that song was I might get to meet Nick,
yeah.
which I obviously did. And, you know, Nick co-produced the record, and we recorded at Abbey Road. And of course, the rest is history on that one.
It is, isn't it? And that's great. So that kick-started everything. But you're so right in saying actually you don't want that necessarily to define you. Do you think it does define what you are when people think of you? Or is it your new work that you would prefer people to think of you, you know, obviously to think of you first and foremost for?
Well, you know, I understand that a lot of people really only know me for that film and that record. And I get that, and that, you know, I'm certainly I'm not silly. I understand why people use the one hit wonder phrase. You know, that it's just kind of like the way it is, the way it's gone. Of course, I'd like people to you know hear my other music. It's difficult because it's a hard one to kind of get past. It being called the One and Only didn't help. but you know, I do have. You know, a lovely fan base of people that have stuck with me over the years, and you know, it's still kind of growing, and people come to. I have a real kind of, you know, big demographic of people coming to my gigs now, and they, you know, they really. I get a lot of requests for some of the newer stuff, or you know, some of my other records that I've put out over the years. So I'm very, very happy, and I'm very, very lucky that I still have that opportunity to be able to play to people and to be able to put music out, which is amazing.
Okay, Chesney, why don't we actually play something from your newer work then, and then we'll be right back with a little bit more chat.
Arrived at JFK, first day in New York, so I go for a walk. I watch as people pass me by, don't look me in the eye. I take a yellow cab to Empire State, I've seen it on TV, doesn't seem real to me. It's hot but I don't see the sun, I don't know anyone.
Hi, it's Chesney Hawkes here. You are listening to Cat Tales.
Oh, Chesney, that was absolutely wonderful. That was a lovely, lovely track. Tell me a little bit about it.
Sure. I mean, my last album, Real Life Love, there's a song on there called John Lennon Lived Here. About the first time I ever went to New York. And, you know, as a John Lennon fan, I was going to promote a record, actually. I was only 19. And I wanted to go to all the places that John Lennon was famous for being photographed at, and obviously where he lived and eventually died, and I wrote the lyric to that, you know, pretty much as I was coming back, you know, all those years ago, and it never made any of my albums back then, because my manager at the time thought it was too grown up. How ridiculous is that? And so I've always had it in my back pocket as a song that I wanted to record. And so when it came to this album, Real Life Love, I was like, I have to put this song on there. So, it has become my most requested song by the fans, apart from the obvious.
Yeah, how wonderful is that? Now, I just want to go back to something else that you said earlier about being a one-hit wonder. But I think that is so derogatory, because you are far, far more than that. What amazing career you've had. You've done, you know, you've got your acoustic shows now. You're doing your albums that you're talking about. You've had an entertainment career with, as you say, Buddy Song, and you've been in pantomime. You've even produced other people's albums. So, in a way, that's only one element of you, but it's a defining moment in your career, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. It's a defining moment for sure. And as I said before, you know, I totally understand how that kind of preconception has arisen. And, you know, and I'm certainly not bitter about it at all. I'm happy to kind of, you know, when people do meet me and you know, only know me from 91
yes.
to kind of educate them. And, you know, whenever people come to my gigs, even if it's just to come along because they're, you know, want to hear the one and only, or, you know, intrigued on what I've been doing, I always say that, you know, I educate one fan at a time, or one person at a time that come to my gigs. And if I've got one person that's gone away saying, oh, you know what, it's really good and I love those new songs, then I've done my job.
Exactly. It's almost like the gateway, isn't it, to opening up the channel for everything else that you've done. And it's, I hear this from quite a lot of people I speak to, that, you know, there's been a fabulous success of a particular track, and actually it's great, but at the same time it overshadows everything else. You think it's so unfair because there's so much more to what you have to offer. And I'm looking at what you've done. I think it's really great that you've actually embraced everything else that there is to offer in terms of the entertainment business, and you've carved a personality, I think, for yourself, rather than just relying on the music industry as well.
Well, I think that these days, that, you know, since the music industry has changed so much since the early 90s, that all of us artists, like myself, have had to diversify. You know, I always loved acting, and that was something that I did from early days there. So I've done quite a lot of musical theatre over the years. I've played Joseph a few times, and you know, I've even written my own musical as well. So, you know, I'm a creative person, so I'm always going to, you know, gravitate to different creative ways of being creative. I mean, so, you know, songwriting and singing and performing and producing and writing and musicals and acting, and it's all the same thing, really, isn't it?
It is.
And yeah, I'm just happy to be able to get the chance to still make a living out of what I do. It's I remember Roger Daltrey said to me once, back in the day, he said, "Fancy getting paid for something you love doing, eh?" I know. I realise how lucky I am, and I'm very grateful to it.
And that sounds just like Roger. He's very humble in terms of what he's achieved himself, isn't he? And
you know, he's an inspiration, really. I mean, I've known Roger for over 30 years now, and he was from the early days. I think I met when I was 17, so he was almost like a bit of a father figure to me back then. I mean, he played my father, so you know.
Exactly. Oh, how wonderful. Is there something that you haven't done that you'd like to do? What's your sort of biggest ambition?
Well, the musical has been something that I really want to get off the ground. I would love to have my written musical to land on a stage. That would be a dream come true. I would love that. I mean, we're still early days. We've done a couple of workshops at the London School of Musical Theatre, and you know, we're still working on it. And that's the thing about musicals; they take a long time to get right. You know, so. That's something I would love to get going, but you know, just getting the opportunity to release music. I mean, my next album, I've got a great new team, and that's really exciting. Obviously, these crazy times have put a little bit of a stop or at least a hold on on the plans for this new album. But it's it's exciting, and I still love the opportunity to do that, and you know, so I'm gonna. I'll carry on doing what I have been doing, which is playing music, performing music, recording music, and writing a lot. So that's kind of my. I'm happy with where I am, you know. So so there's my dreams.
So you're working on your new album now. It was due to be out early this year, but obviously with all the recent stuff going on, I'm sure it's been delayed a little bit. Whereabouts are you in that process?
Well, funnily enough, you're never done, are you?
No.
when you're birthing a baby like this, it's like what this has done, because we were going to be putting it out about now, actually, but what this has done has given me the opportunity to go back and kind of, you know, make sure that everything is exactly as I want it, you know, and given me time to do some more kind of looking into the creative side of the visual artistic side of it, like the photos and the videos and also the artwork so we're pretty much recorded, although you know, if you have time, like we do, there's always other songs. So songs come along, and then you just think, oh my goodness, that has to be on this album, you know. So that is still happening. We're still kind of in the kind of finishing off stages, right, as you know, right now.
It's almost like a painting that's never finished, though, isn't it? You've got to put that paintbrush down at some point.
That's exactly it. And you know, my new management team has said that to me just before all this craziness happened and the lockdown happened. We had a big meeting in London, and they were all saying, right, Chez, it's time to kind of like call it now. It's like, you know, it's not that I was taking a long time, but like they were like, we know what you artists are like. You know, yes. There's always one more song. There's always one, you know, if the reverb's not quite loud enough on that snare, then so be it.
Yes, exactly.
but you know, I guess we're all a little bit perfectionist if we're left to our own devices, you know, we could just keep going.
But why not? Because that's what is your, as you say, it's your baby, isn't it? And it's what you're going to be remembered for. And it's there, out there. Once it's out, you can't take it back, can you, really?
Put your first foot forward, your best foot forward. I mean, you know, and I guess that's always the worries. Like, you know, we can't rush it. It has to be, for me, it has to be like, I have to be happy, you know?
Mm. Absolutely. If you're happy, then it's okay. You know, you're comfortable with what you've done, aren't you? So, in terms of, what's it going to be called? Tell me what it's going to be called and when you hope it's going to be out.
Well, I can't let you know what it's going to be called yet. My management have told me to, they've given me a gag order.
Love it.
So, Kat, I will definitely come to you when I'm able to tell you what it's called. But at the moment, we're putting it on hold until early next year, mm-hmm. as far as the release of the album. There may be a single between now and then, and there will definitely be a lot of teasers, which is something that I think a lot of artists are doing right now. They're kind of, you know, people that have a product to get out there, they're going to be doing a lot of kind of teasing things out there, you know, which is quite fun, actually, because, you know, you can actually play with it and be creative and with the social networks, and you can make little videos, and all sorts of things are going to be coming out, which I think is great for the fans, because it gives them kind of, you know, something to look forward to and to build up to a release.
It does indeed. So, yes, you must come back and talk to me when you've actually got it released and tell me what the album's called, and I'm so excited to hear it. I really am. Oh, look, Chess, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you. Thank you so, so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Kat. Bye-bye.
Take
now.
Care. Bye-bye. Bye.
You've been listening to Kat Tales. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.